WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Today we present an onstage interview with the great soul singer Gladys Knight. Gladys Knight recorded her first hit, Every Beat of My Heart, in 1961 when she was still in high school. In 1966, she started her 8-year stay at Motown, where her hits included The End of Our Road, I Heard It Through the Grapevine, If I Were Your Woman, and Neither One of Us. In the mid-70s, she sang deeply affecting adult ballads like You're the Best Thing That Ever Happened to Me and Midnight Train to Georgia.
For the man,
too much for the man, he couldn't make it,
so he's leaving the life he's come to know. Ooh.
He said he's going
back to find,
going back to find,
ooh, what's left of his world, the world he left behind. Not so long ago. He's leaving.
Leaving.
On that midnight train to Georgia.
Leaving on the midnight train.
Yeah. Said he's going back.
Going back to
a simpler place and time. Oh, yes.
Gladys Knight is perhaps the only performer in Motown history who had hits before joining the label and after leaving it. She has a new CD called At Last, which will be released later this month. I spoke with her in 1996, the year she was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Our interview was recorded at the Masonic Auditorium in San Francisco as part of the 15th anniversary celebration of City Arts and Lectures, which presents onstage conversations in San Francisco with leading figures in literature, criticism, and the performing arts.
Now, you were, 17, I think, when you recorded your first hit, Every Beat of My Heart?
16.
Wow.
Yes. That was quite something, too.
Now, you had two versions that you recorded.
We had
three versions. Okay. Now, the first, I believe, was recorded without you realizing that somebody was recording.
That's right.
What happened?
Well, we were performing at this club called the Builders Club in Atlanta, and we did weekends there while we were in school. And the gentleman that owned the club came to us one night, and we were friends, and his kids went to school with us and everything. So he came to us one night, and he said, hey, you guys, I got some new recording equipment in today, and we're just going to, set up a little makeshift studio in the club tonight and just see what kind of sounds we got. So would you guys mind staying over after the show? So green as we were, we said, okay. And when we got to record that night, we did a lot of the hit stuff, the pop stuff that was out at the time. And then he asked us if we had any original material. And we said, oh, yeah, we were excited about it. We were looking forward to the day when we got a chance to record and have our first record out. And, oh, boy, were we ready, right? So we said, yeah, we got one thing we've really been working on. Now, we weren't thinking at that time, this is not the way to do it. This is not the time that you should be protective, okay? So we did this song. The song was Every Beat of My Heart, okay? So we recorded this song, and when we knew anything, our friends at school started to telling us that we love your record.
And you didn't even know there was a record.
Yes. And they said, you got a record out. I said, is that so? Yeah. And from there, that's how we found out about it. And in the meantime, there was a scout in Atlanta looking for talent. And he had heard this song on the radio, and he asked all around town people how to get in touch with my mom. And he finally found my mom, and they came over and talked to her, and we flew to New York to sign with Bobby Robinson at Fury Records.
And the Fury Records recording became a big hit.
Right, and that's actually how we got the name Gladys Knight and the Pips, because originally we were just the Pips, and I was just one of the lead singers in the group.
Ah.
Okay. And then after we got to New York and we recorded the same song over again, Every Beat of My Heart, then Bobby Robinson suggested, why don't we name our record Gladys Knight and the Pips to distinguish between the VJ and the Hontum record, which is just the Pips. So that's how we got Gladys Knight and the Pips started, and it just kind of stuck, and it was Gladys Knight and the Pips from then on.
I have to say that this 1961 recording is an extraordinary recording. You sound so great on it.
Thank
and particularly
you.
When you think that 17 years old or 16 years old.
Yeah.
So, in fact, I think we should listen to some of this recording. Fury Records, Gladys Knight and the Pips. Let's hear it.
Oh, my goodness.
In every beat of my heart, there's a beat for you.
Uncomfortable to
you
hear
are
that,
really, really something. You know, I never really listened to myself then, because you know how you know, you feel it, that your voice is changing and you're going to crack any minute. That kind of thing. So I didn't do a lot of listening to myself during those days. I listen to myself more now. Maybe it's because I'm more into the creative end and I have to. But yeah, that sounds weird.
Now, I've been reading Berry Gordy's autobiography, and I want to just read what he said about you. He said that the first time he saw Gladys Knight and the Pips, he was impressed by their class, artistry, and stage presence. He said, unlike many of our acts who'd been through our artist development process, Gladys and the Pips were already seasoned before coming to town. They'd actually worked with some of our key artist development people earlier in their career, including choreographer Charlie Atkins.
Uh-huh.
So you already had the equivalent of charm school. You had the choreographer
right.
working with you. How did you get into all of that? And what are some of the values? What are some of the stage values that you learned early on?
Well, that also came from my mom and our parents. They surrounded us with these kinds of people. Maurice King. Let me tell you what Barry did, too, by the way. he did like what he saw in us. And no matter what, he did always show us respect, but you needed Barry's personal touch in order to really, really rise, okay? And that's how eventually we got to getting the recognition on the records that we needed. But Barry saw us and liked everything. Do you know that he hired every single person out from under us that worked with us and started artist development? Charlie Atkins was our pops. He was our first choreographer and, so to speak, our entertainment father, because he taught us our etiquette as to what we do and what we don't do in this industry, you know, as far as teaching us how to move on stage and giving us our character and that kind of thing, along with Maurice King, who for many years had been the musical conductor and director at the famous Flame Show Bar in Detroit. So, you know, all of the people that we worked with, he was a friend of my mom, and he coached us when we were little kids, Maurice King.
I know that the Motown process was that there were meetings, I think, every Friday.
Yeah.
And the producers would come with their new songs and their little demos, mm-hmm. and then everybody would vote on which was the record that week that was actually going to get made.
They had a lot of control in your life.
Yeah, so how did you feel as a performer? Were you in on those meetings, and did you have any say on your material or who the producer would be, what song you'd do?
No, we didn't quite have that freedom at Motown, and that was another one of my pet peeves, so to speak, you know, is that sometimes it got a little personal Because after all, we are dealing with just human beings making these votes. So maybe that person may not have felt so good about something you did, and they're voting on something that could make or break your career, you know, and it may just go the other way. So, no, I don't like that record, you know, that kind of thing for some personal reason. And that came to play sometimes in that arena. And it's just too important a thing to be decided that way.
We're featuring an interview with Gladys Knight, recorded in 1996 at the Masonic Auditorium in San Francisco. There's more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to our onstage interview with Gladys Knight, recorded in 1996.
No, I want you to tell the story of I Heard It Through the Grapevine, one of your great hits.
Yes.
Now, the songwriter and producer of this took it to one of the meetings, and he initially wanted Marvin Gaye to do it.
Yes.
Right? And I think Marvin Gaye was going to sing it more like a ballad.
Really?
That's what Berry Gordy says.
Uh-huh.
That's what Berry Gordy says.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. But anyways, Berry Gordy voted it down. He wanted Marvin Gaye to do a different song.
Okay.
And, right, do I have the story right?
Yes.
Okay.
I would imagine. I didn't know the Marvin Gaye story, but I know that the song had been sitting on the shelf and demoed a couple of times, just trying to see what could be done with it. Matter of fact, Barrett, who was one of the writers on the song, Barrett Strong, did it himself. And it was just kind of sitting around. So when the producer came to us with this particular song, it was like, hey, I really believe in this song, Norman Whitfield and Barrett Strong. And just take it and play with it. And we took the song with us on the road, and we were in the hotels. We sit out in the hall and work on our little song and stuff like that. And
can you tell us a little bit how you worked on that song, what the song sounded like before you started working on it, what you put into it that wasn't written in?
Well, we created the whole background for I Heard It Through the Grapevine. We created the whole background.
Well, the Oh Yes I Do
yeah.
too.
Yeah. You go, Terry. Yep. Yep, we did the, you know, oh, yes, I am, oh, yes, I am. Don't you know that I heard it? We did all of those, all of the black background things that you heard, we did those. And what happened was we kind of broke it up. It wasn't quite put together, verse, chorus, like we ended up with it. And so we just tore it apart, put it back together. We would get up in the morning, fix our breakfast while we're planning. We would tape what we had in mind, and eventually we felt we had it right. We ran down to the studio, and we played it for Norman, and he was so excited. He just flipped. I mean, he just, hey. And Smokey happened to be in the studio. Smokey Robinson happened to be in the studio that afternoon, in Studio A, and we needed a studio because he wanted us to record it right then. And so we went upstairs, and he asked Smokey if we could borrow the studio, and Smokey said, yeah, you know. So we went on in the studio, and we recorded it right then, and it became the biggest selling record Motown had that year, and it became our first number one record. And then along came Marvin that next year. This was in 1967 for us. 1968, Marvin came out with I Heard It Through the Grapevine.
Ooh.
Norman Whitfield and Barrett Strong, who wrote Grapevine, also wrote a lot of the Temptations songs.
Exactly.
Did you ever have to compete with the Temptations for songs?
Yeah. Matter of fact, another thing that bothered me was that when we first came to the company, all the things that they kind of brought us were things that the other artists had done already.
And they wanted to cover?
And it was like hand-me-down stuff. You know, I said, don't we want our own music? You know, that kind of thing. And I remember our very first release from Motown was Everybody Needs Love. Well, the Temptations had worn that out already. You know, I mean, it was a big hit for them. So we had our job cut out for us just to even get any recognition on it, because songs start to belong to people after a while. You know, I mean, a cover, and they're doing a lot of it now, if you've noticed. They're covering everything. I think it's a lack of music, you know, that they're looking for, you know. But I always felt about a cover. I have so much respect for the people that I love that it would be very difficult to do a cover.
So do you feel that your sound or the group's choreography or your image changed much during the Motown years?
Not really. If anything, we got better. And I say this, and I don't mean to offend any of the Temptation fans or lovers out there tonight, but in actuality, the pip started, the fast step, the steps that the Temptations became so known for, the Pips were the first to do that. But the Temptations got the first national recording recognition, so they became known for those fast steps. So on a larger scale, so it started being attributed to them. But in actuality, they used to stand in the wings and watch every move the Pips made. You know, I'm serious.
I believe it.
So
I bet that there isn't a person in the house tonight who hasn't had the fantasy of singing with the Pips behind them.
Yeah. You'd get the best. It's quite an experience, I tell you. It's quite an experience.
Now, you are, as I mentioned before, maybe the only group that was with Motown that had hits before Motown and after Motown.
You know, I heard you say that in the intro.
Is that not right?
Yes, but I never thought about it. I never thought about that. And it's real. It's the truth. Since 61, that particular song was also the one we heard, Every Beat of My Heart, was also a very phenomenal record because it ended up on the charts with the number 2 and the number 3 position, the same record, same group. First time in history that ever happened. So, yeah. So we had music before and a great record success, even as great or greater, came after we left Motown.
Gladys Knight, recorded in January 1996 at the Masonic Auditorium in San Francisco as part of the 15th anniversary celebration of City Arts and Lectures of San Francisco. The evening celebration was produced by Sidney Goldstein with associate producer Stephen Barclay and production coordinator Margaret Moose Pick. The interview was edited for Fresh Air by Joan Tui Westman, Roberta Shurrock, and Patty Leswing. Special thanks to Bubba Knight. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.